Hi there. Welcome to this episode of Just the Dis. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. This episode, I am running down a short stack of Animal Attack movies from Scream Factory. Now, I am quite sure that I have voiced my love for Animals Attack films on this show. I certainly have on Pure Cinema. I'm just not shy about it. I don't know what it is about these movies. I think there's something about this natural force going against man, and man being, you know, pretty much in the minority in terms of the struggle for power there between the two. And I guess I just like movies where people get a certain comeuppance, because I'm a big animal lover. And the unfortunate part is, obviously, there's sometimes some difficult scenes with animals in these movies, but I think at the end of the day, it's just one of those things that is primal or something, and I'm responding to that. I don't know. Anyway, I have three films here, all, as I mentioned, from Scream Factory. I have Man's Best Friend, I have Willard the Remake from 2003, and I have Piranha 2 The Spawning. So let's start with Man's Best Friend.
I want people to really see what's going on in here. Oh, this is so cool.
Exactly what kind of work do you do here?
I do genetic research.
Is this dog an innocent victim of the billion-dollar vivisection industry? And this shit, I can't believe how attached he's become to me already.
I want Max back. We're not talking about a street mutt here. We are talking about a million-dollar research animal.
Thank you, Max. Sweet.
See, Max is not your typical dog. He's a genetic crossbreed.
Get him, Max!
Enhanced sight, hearing, strength, stamina, the ability to climb with jaguar-like agility. What I am trying to tell you is that in the right hands, Max can save thousands of lives. But in the wrong hands, it can be a deadly weapon.
We're in big trouble.
He's coming apart. He is gonna sink.
Best Friend.
I hadn't seen this movie since the 90s, since VHS, I think, because I remembered very little of it, you know? I mean, it opens with, like, these paintings of, like, regal, proper canines and with royalty and stuff like that, noblemen, and this, like, epic music playing, and then it gets progressively a little darker, and the dogs are sort of attacking people, and It's well put together, I must say. And then, you know, we go to this, like, opening scene in a lab where this woman goes to check on some animals and she finds a cage open, and then we get, like, this POV shot of a dog, like, running down a hallway and then coming up behind her and attacking her. And it totally reminded me of Jaws, you know, in terms of the opening where the woman gets grabbed by the legs and we don't see what's attacking. And funny enough, I was listening to the director's commentary, which is included on this Blu-ray, and he actually mentions that specific thing, and that's what he was going for with the opening scene, which is cool. I just thought it vaguely reminded me of that, but yep, that's definitely what he wanted. So anyway, for the story on this one, the back says, pulse-pounding action and spine-chilling thrills put the bite into this sci-fi shocker starring Ally Sheedy and Lance Henriksen. When an ambitious news journalist, Sheedy, breaks into a genetic research facility, she uncovers the biggest story of her career and unleashes the lab's most dangerous experiment, Max, a genetically enhanced guard dog with a vicious killer instinct. Superior sight, superior hearing, strength, and intelligence make him faster, stronger, smarter than any other animal alive, and deadlier. Without the neuropathic drugs needed to curb his aggressive nature, his predatory urge surges out of control, and once he tastes blood, nothing can stop him. Yeah, so this movie gets kind of progressively more ridiculous, which is not bad, you know, in a way. I could see it getting to some people and having them go, okay, this is just too silly. But I don't know. Kind of works for me somehow. Yeah, Ally Sheedy's news reporter character is like tired of these like fluffy, lame stories, and she's trying to get hard-edged material about animal testing, and she ends up like letting Max out, and she ends up taking Max home, and there's like some serious like short circuit parallels here where she has this thing that, you know, she thinks is just very sweet, but there is also like potential lethal stuff that can come from this animal. And she's got a total, you know, douchebag boyfriend who doesn't like dogs. By the way, it's crazy how in movies you can portray people immediately as shitty by showing them not liking dogs. And I don't know what that's about, because I definitely know some people that don't like dogs in real life. And although I can't fully align myself with those people because I'm a huge dog person, I don't think they're villains or anything. But movies, it's always like, if you don't like dogs, you're the villain of the movie, you know? And he definitely tries some stuff with this dog, and the dog is not having any of it, which is great. But yeah, Heinrichsen runs this lab, and he's like trying to get the dog back because he knows that there's a ticking clock on the dog and that he gives him these drugs to calm him. And they show this like whole scene of him talking to the cops.
Exactly what kind of work do you do here?
I do genetic research, often using animal models.
Talking about vivisection?
Yes, I am.
Viva what? Vivisection. Those cruel experiments they do on animals to test out new products. My girlfriend talks about it all the time. She wants to make sure things like the shampoo I use are on a cruelty-free products list.
Well, your girlfriend is rather ignorant, like most of these animal rights people.
You try and tell her that.
Look, the kind of research I do here is about saving lives. Human lives. That's what's important, isn't it? I don't make eyeliner here. And I don't pour acid into monkeys' eyes or stitch them closed either.
Yeah, we get the picture, Doc. We'll be in touch.
Describing what's happening. And then later on, he actually shows, like, the room, I guess, where the genetic research and splicing was done, or at least the materials were gathered. And it's like a room full of deadly, some endangered animals, a tiger, like a jaguar, an owl, a snake, or at least they show footage of a rattlesnake. And he's just talking about how he gene spliced all this stuff, all these traits from these different animals into this dog. And it's pretty funny.
You know, when you think of guard dogs, you usually think of German Shepherd. They're loyal, smart, lethal, but not good enough. And now with the development of the E-Max 3000, they're totally obsolete. You see, Max, as I call him, is not your typical dog. He's a genetic crossbreed.
A mutt?
No, I don't mean a mutt, sir. Look around you. Each of these animals is endowed with a specific desirable trait that is dedicated to their survival. If you took the DNA from each and genetically spliced it into the DNA of a breed of a dog, you would have a magnificent creature.
You've actually been able to do this?
Enhance sight, hearing, strength, speed, stamina, the ability to climb with jaguar-like agility. Even a chameleon-like capability to camouflage itself if threatened. Each of these traits have been bred into Max. His intelligence is so advanced that he can operate as a standalone unit without a human handler. He can comprehend almost 350 spoken commands.
Is that in English or in Spanish?
You take your pick, Detective. What I am trying to tell you is that in the right hands, Max can save thousands of lives. In the wrong hands, he can be a deadly weapon.
But I had always remembered the dog being like more of a robot from the cover. Like you see, it looks like a robot dog, but it just turns out to be, you know, this genetic mutant. It's very much like a Frankenstein kind of story ultimately. Anyway, enjoyable stuff. You know, the dog just basically running rampant and taking out mailman characters and eating whole cats alive. And, you know, it builds just the way you'd think it would. And, you know, it's just what you kind of expect it to be. And that's fine. I'm into that. The special features are, well, it's a new 2K scan from the original film Elements. And then they've included a new audio commentary with writer-director John LaFia, who was one of the writers on the first Child's Play movie and directed Child's Play 2 previous to this in 1990. And he mentions that he had worked with Kevin, I think, Yeager previously on the Child's Play films, and that he had done the effects on that one and on Man's Best Friend. And the film was very much at the beginning of the CG, so they didn't really have access to much of that stuff. So much more of the effects were done with puppetry, which you can kind of see, but which kind of works. And he said the story was inspired by some raids by PETA around this time of animal testing labs, and that he's a big animal fan himself and talks about how some of the lab stuff was hard for him to shoot. And the commentary is a tiny bit sparse in spots, like he'll drop out for stretches while he watches the movie, but he does emphasize that no animals were harmed or put in jeopardy for the movie. He says they chose a Tibetan Mastiff as the dog breed for the movie after much discussion over what, you know, type of dog they should use. He said this kind of dog hadn't been used much in films prior to this, and that's for a reason. I guess apparently they're very difficult to train, but he said that they needed a dog that could draw sympathy and be cute early on and also be scary later on in the film, and that sort of lends itself to the Frankenstein stuff, I guess. Although I don't know how cute Frankenstein is. But anyway, it's a fun movie. Definitely worth a pickup if you're an Animal Attack fan. I enjoyed it. And I enjoy Lance Henriksen. And obviously he'll come up again when I talk about Piranha 2. Now, the last thing I noticed that he mentioned in the commentary that I thought was cool was that the first real dog attack scene that is actually shown, that's where Max attacks the mailman, as I mentioned, was actually sort of inspired by Brian De Palma's slow motion violence sequences, which I thought was cool. There's some De Palma inspiration in Man's Best Friend. Anyway, moving on to Willard, the 2003 remake done by Glenn Morgan.
Nothing goes right.
Willard?
Night, Mom.
Come in here.
Willard, what an awful name. If you had a stronger name, that Frank Martin wouldn't push you around.
What part of your fire don't you understand?
Willard, let's go drink.
I'm not hitting on you, Willard.
Willard's styles didn't quite fit in.
It's been a bad day.
Look, everybody, food.
But he's suddenly become very popular.
You're the best friends that I ever had.
Now,
turd up.
A guy who could never get a break.
In.
Is about to get even.
Out.
Willard!
We've come to see you. They'll do anything I tell them.
Turn up.
Do you think it's okay if I just put her inside?
Sure.
Willard? What was all that noise?
It's just the wind.
Crispin Glover.
Willard!
Willard.
And the back of this one says, for years, Willard Stiles, Crispin Glover, has been trapped in a dead-end job with no friends and no future. Willard's life seems hopeless until he makes an eerie discovery. He shares a powerful bond with the rats that dwell in his basement. Now a guy who's been trampled in the rat race his entire life is suddenly ready to tear up the competition, beginning with his boss. Crispin Glover leads the pack in this skin-crawling thriller that takes an unforgettable journey into the mind of a madman. So I'm a big fan of this movie, and it's definitely my favorite of all the movies I'm talking about on this episode, but in terms of remakes, it's one that I actually go to bat for as one of the best remakes ever made. And I love the original Willard, and I love Ben. You know, both of those movies are a lot of fun for what they are. But I was recently on an episode of Screen Drafts, which is another great podcast you should check out, where they make the guests do these film lists, like these definitive film lists, and Elric and I were on talking about remakes, and one of my honorable mentions that could have been like a number seven spot on the list of seven is Willard for a remake. I really think it's that good, and Crispin Glover is just outstanding. As much as I love Bruce Davison in the original film, and I do, Crispin Glover is one of my favorite actors. He's just one of those presences that is unlike any other person on this planet. You know, everything he does, everything in his instincts about acting and performance, his cadence, he's just so unique and so enjoyable to watch in his own odd way. And I just adore him. So obviously I'm going to be into this, but yeah, this one, you know, just a story of a guy put upon who finds that he can control rats, and then he starts getting revenge with the rats. His boss is played by Arlie Ermey. That role was originally played by Ernest Borgnine in the first Willard movie, and both are great as these like evil asshole bosses. I'm trying to think if I give the edge to Arlie Ermey.
My mother is sick.
I see, so it's your mother's fault that you've fallen behind. Willard, I'm an old friend of the family. Hell, I've known your mother since before you were born. She's a fine lady and she deserves to be kept comfortable. Your dad was like a father to me. And I promised him that I would always look after you and your mother. And as long as she was alive, you'd have a job right here. And in keeping with that promise, I must insist that you find a good rest care facility for Mom.
We can't afford that.
Hell, I guess you could always sell the house. Here's an idea. I'd tear it down and build apartments on.
I'm sorry, Mr. Martin. I'll catch up. I'll stay late.
Oh yeah, you would love that, wouldn't you, Willard? Suck up on more overtime than it even cost me for a temp. You'll catch up all right, asshole, and you'll catch up on your own damn time. There's one thing that you will never understand, Willard. Business is a rat race. Promise or no promise, I will not allow myself to be devoured by all of those other rats because of you.
I don't know. I might slightly give the edge. The Ernest Borgnine character it's just rough. Like, he is just, maybe it's the better performance, I don't know, but like, I really like Arlie Ermey in this role, and you know, his comeuppance is outstanding. There's the great line, tear him up, you know, which is repeated in this movie, and it's about rats ripping people apart, and it's great. What I would say about this particular Blu-ray is that it is one of the great Screen Factory releases of the past, you know, couple years in terms of how much stuff they've included on this Blu-ray. I mean, obviously it's a new 2K scan of the original film elements. They're including a whole bunch of stuff that's been ported over from the original New Line DVD release. And this is back when they really did these deluxe New Line DVDs. So you've got an audio commentary with, you know, Glenn Morgan, producer James Wong, actors Crispin Glover and Arlie Ermey. That's a great commentary. Lots of good stuff in there. There is a documentary called Year of the Rat, which is like the making of Willard, and it's done by, I think, Glenn Morgan's assistant on the film, and she's great. She did a great job with it. It's like an hour and 13 minutes. She talks to Glenn Morgan. She talks to James Wong. She talks to the production designers, the cinematographer, just all the rat trainers. I mean, she really goes in depth on this making of, and you know, you get to hear like little snippets of production meetings, you know, where they're like, you know, we're screening Psycho and the Birds for anybody that has time. So you hear about like movies that influence the film and whatnot, and that's great. But it's just a really thorough making of that I enjoyed. There is a thing called Rat People, Friends or Foes, which is about 19 minutes. It's a real rat documentary about people that, you know, collect rats or have them as pets, and then some scientist type people, and it's cool. I like that kind of stuff. There's deleted and alternate scenes with commentary. There is the music video for Ben by Crispin Glover with optional commentary. That's pretty entertaining. Behind the scenes footage and interviews from the original press kits. But then we get to like the new stuff, and there's a ton of stuff here in terms of just the new additions. There's a new audio commentary with Glenn Morgan and director of photography Robert McLaughlin. That's moderated by Justin Beam, who I'm a big fan of his work and what he's done for these releases. He's really good with this sort of thing, and it's a great commentary. He gets a lot of cool stuff out of both of these guys, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. There is another new audio commentary with animal trainers Mark Harden and David Alsbury of Animals for Hollywood, which is fascinating, fascinating stuff. I'm just, like I said, I love Animals Attack movies, but a part of that is just watching like animals act. Like, how do you, you know, get them to do certain things, and marveling at different animals doing stuff you just can't believe they got them to do in the moment, or editing it in such a way as to make it look like they did certain things. Either way, like, it takes highly trained people to help facilitate this. They always say don't work with kids, animals, whatever, and you can see how difficult it can be, but I'm one who certainly appreciates the final product and how great that is when it's done well. So anyway, that's a cool commentary. There is maybe my favorite feature on here is a new interview with Glenn Morgan, just him, just a sit down. It's called The Road to Willard. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. And, you know, he talks about basically everything, you know, his beginnings as a filmmaker on up through Willard. So he talks about early writing gigs and X-Files stuff and other TV work, the Final Destination movies, and then like a great story about the bidding war over the Willard script and him getting phone calls from like Bob Shea, Harvey Weinstein. There's a great weird quote from Harvey Weinstein that I won't spoil, but not surprising. And then getting a call from Steven Spielberg that wasn't necessarily a pleasant phone call and things like that. Really, really cool stories.
They're so good, and Boone and his guys, Mark, were so good, so experienced that they could tell you 6 months before you got to Vancouver, here's how it's going to work. Rats are going to come out. The first three or four practices, they're going to be all screwy. Then they're going to get it. Then you've got four takes, and they're bored, or they've been fed, and they don't perform because they don't need food. And they were right. And so you could prepare. Like, I think we mentioned that I didn't know whether it was animatronic CGI or the rats were going to come through. And Bill Carraro and I, we didn't know. We'll wait and see. And it was like by far the rats, because boom, they knew what they were doing. And so you could be prepared that you would go, okay, here's the shot, here's the thing, you'd block whatever you needed to know, and then you'd go sit down, and they'd go out, and it was a trailer that was always 72 degrees up in Vancouver, which can, March can get chilly, and the trainers would come out with these carts, and they'd bring the whatever number, 500 rats if we need the whole room, and they did their thing, and while you would know, okay, they're getting close. Because they did it the same way every time, that they would have a tube of cardboard this high, and they just fill it with rats. And when you action, they'd take the thing away, and they'd run out. The trainers would run out, and all the rats would, because that's what their natural thing is, to go to the wall for safety. So you had 3 or 4 seconds where it was a full area, and then they would move. Which was like to go out there. If I had to go out there and go, oh hey, Crispin, could you do that? You just suddenly your whole vision all around you was. You were in the middle of it, you know.
Some alternate casting choices: Joaquin Phoenix, Mark Ruffalo, Jason Schwartzman. Just lots of cool stories and advice for working filmmakers here. So I highly recommend this one. It's definitely great in terms of what you can get out of it and what you can take away from his experience and his years in the business. I think he's a really pragmatic guy, and I appreciate that. Another new feature is Destination Willard, an interview with director of photography Robert McLaughlin. Also great. I didn't know his work that well, or I wasn't as familiar with him prior to this, but I have a lot of respect for him after hearing the commentary and his interview. Both great and very helpful in terms of how this kind of thing gets done and the approach. I really enjoyed it. And then one more new feature, it's called the Rat Trainer's Notebook, and it's behind-the-scenes footage from the Animals for Hollywood So you're dealing with the guys from the commentary and stuff there, or at least the company, Annals for Hollywood there. And so it's all good stuff, like just a packed Blu-ray. And I really enjoy that there's so much for this movie. And I really do feel like Willard is still pretty underappreciated in the canon of both remakes and horror films. I think it's kind of a dream come true in casting Crispin Glover, and I think it's one of his great performances and just a really effective movie. So anyway, that's Willard from Scream, also great. And lastly, we shall talk about Piranha 2, The Spawning from 1982.
Sleek, fierce, savage, deadly, the piranha. For centuries, nature's most ferocious killer. Until now. The new breed is here. Faster, more ferocious, and infinitely more deadly. Piranha 2.
It's tremendous jaw pressure. It's sheared cleanly through bone in places.
It's here. It's alive. And it's multiplying.
We spliced in genes from different species to create the ultimate killer organism.
It lives in the depths of the sea, but it can strike anywhere.
Loretta! Loretta, what is that?
A super breed of killer fish that can swim, fly, and attack at any time. They bred the ultimate killing machine. Now, you're not safe out of the water. Piranha 2, Flying Killers.
The back says, while investigating the mysterious death of a diver, scuba instructor Ann Kimbrough, Trisha O'Neill, makes a horrific discovery. Mutated piranhas with wings that enable them to fly are responsible for the death. As the body count rises, Ann desperately tries to convince the manager of the resort to call off the annual fish fry on the beach, but he's determined to give his guests the ultimate feeding frenzy. This exciting sequel to Joe Dante's original Piranha also features Lance Henriksen, and is the directorial debut of James Cameron. I don't know that Cameron has fully disowned this movie, but I kind of think he has at this point. But yeah, does that, you know, calling off the beach activities sound familiar? Well, of course it does, because this is very Jaws, as was Piranha, but this is even more by the numbers Jaws in that way. It's another Lance Henriksen movie, and you know, it's like 11 years prior, so it was interesting to see him get younger in watching Man's Best Friend and then this. He has some good moments in this movie, for sure.
Do you know the name of the deceased?
Yeah, Robert Hayward.
Hayward. Was he enrolled in one of your diving tours?
Yes.
And this incident took place on one of your regularly scheduled dives?
Yes.
Did you see what happened?
He just swam away from the rest of the group. He was only out of sight for a second or two.
Did you see a shark at any time?
No, but it wasn't that.
A school of barracuda?
No, but...
A moray eel?
Stephen, would you listen to me for a minute? It wasn't a shark, and it wasn't a barracuda, and it wasn't a moray eel, and it wasn't a jealous lover.
Then what was it?
I don't know. That's the point. I'm pretty damn familiar with the marine life in this area, and I don't know.
Hey, come on, man. Why don't you just give her a break? She's had a hell of a shock. She's upset. Can't you see that?
Who's this? What's his name? Sherman. Tyler Sherman.
Stephen, I've got to get a look at the body. I only saw it for a moment under the water.
That's out of the question. That's the coroner's job.
Stephen, I was responsible for that boy. That's my job. I have to know what happened.
That's right. You were responsible. And that's precisely why you can't touch the body. Because It may be used in evidence in a case of negligence.
You are still the most pig-headed person I've ever met.
That may be true, but I'm in charge of this investigation. And if I need any information, I'll ask you.
The print they use for this Blu-ray is under the title Piranha 2 Flying Killers, which is interesting. It feels like an Italian production right off the bat, you know, kind of dubbed looking actors, sexy opening, underwater sex scene with a couple that are getting chowed by piranhas. Thankfully, they are still using the iconic School of Piranha sound, you know, as they come to attack. It's like one of those great cinematic sounds, like the sound of the ants and them. Kind of slow going after the first kill. The next big one with an out-of-water piranha comes at about 40 minutes when a nurse is killed by a fish that was still stuck in one of the bodies from a diving attack at the morgue. That's pretty memorable. I think there's a clip from Shout Factory or Scream Factory online of that scene. It's easy to see why it has been YouTube clipped when you go and check it out. It also stars the lovely Carol Davis, who reminds me slightly of Fran Drescher, like somewhere between Fran Drescher and Vanity. She's also in Mannequin, I think, is where I first saw her. She works with the dude at the other department store, either as a spy or I can't remember, but you'll definitely recognize her. She's very cute. It's just Jawsy kind of resorty kind of thing. Piranhas attacking people. Yeah, it's really about the last 20 minutes when it starts to amp up, and you know, there are some good scenes of people just sitting on boats and hearing like this flapping as the piranhas zip by before they get full-on chomped. So it's definitely amusing for the flying piranha attack scenes and the underwater attack scenes. I've always enjoyed piranhas as an entity, as a thing. You know, when I was a kid, it was like this huge, scary deal that piranhas could, you know, eat people alive in seconds or whatever. And you just would hear stories about the Amazon. And actually, I'm one of those weirdos that got pet piranhas as a kid in high school. I had a red-belly piranha. I had a black piranha. They were pretty cool fish. You know, I mean, you couldn't, you had to be careful when you stuck your hand in the tank, and you had to feed them properly and stuff. But I had one red-belly piranha that got huge that I had for like years and years and years. And it was so sad because he was in great shape, and we lost him when we went on vacation 1 week or so when the heater in the tank malfunctioned and just like made the water way too hot and it killed him. It was horribly sad. I was so upset to come home to that, especially because I'd had him for years and he was a sweetheart. Anyway, enough personal digressions. I like piranhas. I like piranha movies. You know, even lame ones like Killer Fish are still in my wheelhouse. You know, this is not a great movie by any means, but Lance Henriksen definitely elevates, and the piranha effects are fun. So it's worthwhile. Definitely. This one has a couple interviews. There's a new interview with actor Ricky Paul Golden.
You want to lose that boat? I told you the next time I caught you and your son dynamite fishing, I'd throw your sorry ass in jail. And I meant it.
Lance Henriksen went on to be, he was in a lot of James Cameron films after that. And I was jealous, to be honest. But he was a great dad. We'd improv a lot on the set. I remember we had to do a stunt. He had to drive this small boat, and I had to jump from that boat. From a sailboat to that boat, I believe it was. And Lance was just like a hot shot.
I tried to reach you.
I mean, I'm a 16-year-old at this point, so I'm a sponge. I'm taking in everybody's behavior. And Lance acted a certain way on this set.
She's cute, huh?
She's okay.
And Lance is the type that's like, he really wanted to jump from stuff. And he was jumping from speeding boats even when he wasn't asked to jump from a speeding boat.
I found the nurse at the morgue with her throat torn out on dry land. I got another girl laying right next to her in the same condition. This is my conclusion. I got three bodies on my hands. And my wife is the last one to see two of them alive.
And there is also an interview with special effects artist Brian Wade. But yeah, I know if you like aquatic horror and killer fish movies, this is definitely one to pick up. I'm excited for the upcoming steelbook of Piranha, which I think has a new transfer of the movie, that one coming from Scream Factory as well. I'm a big fan of the original movie a lot. It's definitely one of Joe Dante's best for me and a lot of fun. But anyway, this one, not quite up to that level, but still a movie that I've always enjoyed. And I love the idea of flying killer fish. I mean, come on. That's just amazingly goofy, but hard not to get caught up in if you're into the animal attack genre. But anyway, so that is it for this round of the show. Hopefully we get to have some more animal attack movies from other labels coming soon. I'm going to try and maybe do one of these episodes every so often because I just like to highlight the genre. I like to make sure people are aware of the stuff that's coming out and in terms of it and supporting it so that we get more. Because my goal is really to have even the bad animal attack movies on Blu-ray. And there are a lot of them, a lot of my favorites already available, but we can always use more as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week, and I will talk to you all very soon. Bye-bye.